Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Jill Hubbard and Mylon Yurkovich and your phone calls. Hi there.
Hey, guys.
Good to be with you.
In case you're tuning in for the first time, where have you been? But secondly, Dr. Jill Hubbard has written many books. The Secrets Women Keep is one. And then her most recent, Forgiving Our Fathers and Mothers, Mylon and Kay wrote the book, How We Love. And I was actually beneficiary of the material before it was in book form. I remember
me too.
You know, Mylon, you giving me
we were beneficiaries. Me too.
Well, and we heard you for years, so we knew everything that was leading up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry about that. We're glad you're with us. And by the way, while we're on the air, you're watching Facebook Live. If you want to call us, it's 1-800-229-3000. You know, we're always live. Whether we're on radio or not, we are always live. When we do a program, we're on Facebook Live, so we're live all the time. And you can always get in touch with us. But if we're not on the air, you know, 1-800-NEW-LIFE is the number to call, and we just get thousands of phone calls, and it's such a privilege to be able to help folks, and we'd love to help you. And I guarantee you, you would love for us to help somebody you love, probably. You'd like for them, you know, at our marriage workshops, a lot of people come because they want their spouse fixed. Well, we don't do that, but we will work with you. By the way, in my Going Deeper time, that's at 5 o'clock Eastern time, Facebook Live, I'm talking about shame. And I'm only doing about 21 programs on shame because it is such a horrific, horrific thing to be walking around in shame that somebody else has inflicted upon you. Now, if you're doing something that isn't appropriate, then a little bit of shame might motivate you to clean up your act. I would hope so. But a lot of times, guys, people, they're walking around kind of wearing the shame that somebody else ought to be wearing or experiencing.
Well, many times that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Shame is placed upon us almost like a cloak by other people. Often when we're children, a shameful environment. I love what one therapist said. He said, what began as a we with age became a me. Mm-hmm. And so this implies clearly that there's a causation to shame, and it is imposed or placed upon us or imputed upon us by other people. And as we grow older, we have to ask ourselves, do I want to carry things that are put upon me by other people?
Right, because when we're young, we naively accept that.
Correct.
Right? We listen to those.
Well, we believe it. We believe it.
Yeah, we believe it.
Yeah, we believe I'm flawed, something's wrong with me. But then as we get older, we need to put off, the Apostle Paul said, the things that, you know, are not healthy. And those are even things from our past. No matter who gave them to us, we have to say, I'm not going to carry this anymore.
Right.
The bad news can be the good news. When you finally discover, wow, this isn't God making me feel this way. This isn't the way God made me to feel.
Mm-hmm.
This is because this happened or somebody did these things to me or said these things. And it's such a relief to know, oh, so the other people in the world that haven't been through what I've been through, they're not feeling this way. So there must be a way to get better, to live in a different way with different feelings. And it's true. Mm-hmm. A really great Christian counselor can help you to no longer feel that kind of shame.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Because so it's also a self-protective, very young feeling.
So true. We'll take a break. Come right back with your calls after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Jill Hubbard, Mylon Yurkovich, and your phone calls, such as the one that Isaiah has given us from Boise, Idaho. KBXL is the station. Hi there. How are you? And thanks for calling us today. What's going on?
Hey. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
Let's see. Back in August, I called about my brother who had said he was hearing God's voice speak to him audibly. And I just kind of, well, let's see. I wanted to give just a brief update. And my question last time was how to get him to communicate to me about it. And
well, what happened then? What happened since that call?
One of the things that he had said God had told him was that on October 21st, his wife and him were going to have a baby boy.
Mm-hmm.
That's come and passed. She's still pregnant with a baby girl. Nothing happened. And so we've been engaging with him, my wife and I and his wife, just trying to get him to talk about the subject and reason with us. We've suggested counseling, going to counseling with him, and he's rejected that. And most of the time when we sit down to talk to him, he just won't communicate back to us.
Okay.
We know he's listening, we know he's hearing, but we don't know how to get him to respond.
Okay. All right. So what's the question for us then?
How do you get somebody to talk to you when they've been believing something is very true and it turns out it's not true, yet I can only assume he's still holding on to that. How do I get him to communicate? And
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's you know,
my question.
The people that God talks to, he tells mm-hmm. them what he wants them to know, and they share that with other people, and they're 100% right every time. And if you're not 100% right every time, something else, obviously, is causing you to think that that was the voice of God. But those prophets, you know, that was, it wasn't, you know, Jeremiah was a prophet because he got it right 9 out of 10 times. It was 10 out of 10. And a lot of times, if someone who's thinking they're talking to God, they're beyond any, you can't just sit down and say, okay, here's the rational reason why we're not believing you or something, because they're functioning at a different level. Mylon, let's start with you. What are you thinking when I know you talk to God every day directly, and maybe he talks to you. I don't know, but we're much more into talking to God than waiting for him to talk to us. But Mylon, what do you think here? What could he do that would be helpful?
Isaiah, when did your brother flip a switch?
It was it was this February, I believe. He got it in his mind that he really wanted to hear directly from God, and he started fasting, and I think he fasted for 30 days, and then at the end of that he started hearing from God.
Okay, so let's talk about extremism.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen your brother exhibit extremism before?
Yes.
Okay, when? When did that begin?
Give us an example of another place where he's really out, you know, very extreme versus others.
Okay. I've got two examples, and I'll make them real quick. When we were both late teens, we decided to take a break from all entertainment, like movies. We liked, you know, Star Wars, Marvel, all that. We'd watch those a lot. So we both took a break for a year, didn't watch any of it. And I came to the conclusion after that that was really good. We needed a break because we were obsessed with it. But I went back into watching some of those things. My brother decided all entertainment was just bad and shouldn't be watching it at all.
Okay. That's a good illustration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And was there another?
Okay. There is one more that kind of led up to this. So this happened this year on February. Last year on February, my brother and his wife went to a Seventh-day Adventist conference and really sunk into the keeping of the Sabbath and no pork, just kind of the general Seventh-day teachings. And it wasn't that they, like, I'm okay if they want to keep the Sabbath, that's fine, but they didn't talk to anybody about it. They went to the conference for, I think it was 2 months worth of meetings every other weekend or whatever. And then once they'd made their decision, oh, this is right, then they went out to try and convince everybody else, you need to be keeping the Sabbath or you're not doing what's pleasing to God.
So did your brother experience any trauma of any kind throughout his life? You know, when people really gravitate toward extreme positions, often they have been traumatized, hurt. They live in the realms of either things are all good or all bad, and so they have no middle ground. Do you know of anything about mm-hmm. that?
No. I mean, we were both homeschooled. I spent just about every day with my brother. Nothing, like, no serious injuries or, like, our parents didn't divorce or anything like that. Things that I could think of that could relate to that. Both of my parents are perfectionists to a point. So, like, when my dad works in construction, if you know, the 2x4s don't line up, you know, within an eighth of an inch, you know, when you're roughing in a 2x4s, you're like, that's a problem for him. Where most people, it's like, oh, it's an inch off. That's okay. Slap some nails in and keep going. You know.
Okay, so Isaiah, so this is really important. What you just said.
Yeah.
Both parents are perfectionists. And you're homeschooled, and so there's this rigid environment that he grows up in.
Right. Was it an atmosphere of right and wrong? Constantly looking at what's good, what's not good.
Yeah. That was a topic that came up pretty frequently.
Right. And so you and your brother, you know, came into the world differently. You have a different personality makeup, and it sounds like he gravitated toward really literally taking that. And, you know, it's like the goal to keep out everything bad. You know, we erect all kinds of rules to keep ourselves good. Right? It's almost like we negate why Jesus came for us, because we think somehow if we adhere strictly to all these ideas that will preserve good, that we can, you know, almost purify ourselves.
Right.
And it sounds like your brother is becoming more and more eccentric in that.
I would agree with that. Yep.
Yeah. There's also, I think, people like this can tend to border on mental illness, too. You see people like this who end up breaking down. It might be helpful. You know, I agree with Steve. You're not going to sit down and reason with him. So in some ways, you need to, you know, meet him where he's at, but then at times point out the contradictions, right? And it also might warrant him being evaluated by a psychiatrist.
Yeah. And I'm thinking
because
maybe...
I'm concerned that he's headed not in a good direction.
Yeah. But maybe his wife would be someone that would listen. Because I would imagine she's pretty confused being married to him. And maybe she would listen.
Yep.
Now, I want to ask you a question. Just tell me true or false. Mom and Dad... Okay. cared a lot more about whether or not we did the right thing or the wrong thing than how we felt about anything. Is that true or false?
How we felt about it. Can you explain how we felt about anything a little bit more?
Well, Timmy, let's talk about your day. How did you feel today? How did it feel when you took that test? Versus, okay, did you get in trouble today? Did you make an A? Did you make 100 on that test? Two different ways of talking to a child.
I see. And then I forget how you phrased the question, but there wasn't
Did they care about how you felt, I guess is what I'm...
Because their performance, the perfectionism is about performance.
Mm-hmm. They did care about how we felt. There was not a lot of, it wasn't like, well, how do you feel about what's happening so much, but more about how to deal with it. More like that.
So I'm just thinking that he probably isn't aware of how other people feel about things. He's probably in a different kind of world than that. And I know, Mylon asked when he went off. Was it off the rails, Mylon?
I said, when did the switch get flipped?
Yeah. Switch flipped.
That's when he passed it.
And so I just think he is in a different world. His world is just not like ours. And I would really try to see if there you could make some inroads with his wife.
You know, I talked to somebody the other day, and they were telling me about somebody also who was extreme, and how they fasted for 40 days about something, and I'm just going, wow, that's extremism. And then to this very day, there was extremism in their emotions and in their behaviors. And so you just have to realize in some cases people find safety and refuge in extremism.
Mm-hmm. Because more is better.
They're protected because this is God saying stuff, I don't have to. You know, so they're protected in that environment, you know. And so it removes me. What's happened to your brother is he's been removed from relationships.
Well, right. And that's where, you know, other people telling him or giving him feedback on what it's like to be with him is often good. Like how you each experience him can often be good, because someone who hyper-spiritualizes really pushes people away. It's a non-starter. You can't go there. How can you argue with God talking to him?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a form of hyper-spiritualization and superiority, right? I'm special because I get these messages from God.
So true.
Right? So it often makes up for a lot of inadequacies.
Okay, I'm going to send you a copy of Take Your Life Back. I hope you're going to like that, and I hope it helps you in dealing with him, the other folks. Let's go to Lisa, Philadelphia. That's where she's calling from, WFIL. Hey, Lisa, how are you today?
Hello. I'm good. Hi.
Good. How could we help you today? What's going on?
All right. So I've read the Boundaries book, and I'm actually now listening to it on audio or Audible. The question that I have is, if you're dealing with somebody who has more of a controlling personality, and they say that they love to control their environment, and it's your spouse, and you have more of a compliant personality, where not too many things seem to bother me, so I don't get apart every little thing. The few things that I may ask to be done, if it's a matter of he feels comfortable or I don't feel comfortable, what he feels goes, and I'm not considered. So I'm trying to figure out how to not control him, but also gain the ground and the respect that I need in order to live without feeling like I'm becoming distant or embittered.
Seems like a reasonable thing that somebody would want, like you. So we're going to give you some help right after this. You're listening to New Life Live. Mylon Yurkovich, Dr. Jill Hubbard, Stephen Arterburn here. If you go to newlife.com, you'll find out about all the stuff that we do. And boy, is it ever changing people's lives. We love that. And we're going to change some more people's lives on November the 7th with Every Man's Battle. If you've got a guy and you're suspicious of, hey, maybe, well, you know, why don't you just suggest he give us a call or go to newlife.com and find out about Every Man's Battle.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here, Mylon Yurkovich, Dr. Jill Hubbard, and we are talking with Lisa from Philadelphia. And she's in one of these, you know, to say the least, one of these tiebreaker marriages where, you know, if he doesn't like what she's thinking and whatever, it's just going to be his way and he doesn't really care about her. So is there a specific question for us that we could answer? We hate it when we hear about these kinds of situations.
I guess I don't know how to what actions to take if what he's doing is imposing on my freedom, because I kind of feel like that would mean then I would have to impose on his freedom, which I feel like I'd be controlling him. I just don't know. Yeah. I don't know how not to be disrespectful or not care what he thinks, but it's encroaching on my freedom.
Yeah.
Mylon, go ahead, Jill.
Well, so I'm just wondering about an example of where...
Sure. I can actually give you two examples.
Because you should be able to do what you need to do and he do what he needs to do, right?
Well, you would think. So let's just say there's one room in our home that is an office, and I've asked him for over 7 years to please clean up his portion because he's using the so-called office as a hoarding place. If I took pictures, you'd say, oh, this is an absolute issue with hoarding. He hasn't thrown anything out from past loved ones, anything, and he'll keep receipts that you can't even read for 10 and 20 years, duct tape. If you pull it, dust flies off of it. It's not even glue. So the thing is, I've asked him, please clean this up so that I can have a real office and you can have a real office. And he tells me, I'll get to it. I'm busy. And depending on what's going on in his life, that everybody who's living has something going on, whether it's work or studying
right,
or whatever. And I am not being sensitive to what he's always going through. And he'll say, if you have an issue, you clean up your stuff. And I'm like, I already did.
Sorry, I'm going to cut you off here because, okay, so this sheds a little different light on it. So he has some other issues going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to be able to reason. So someone who is hoarding is always going to feel controlled by the person who wants things clean, even if it seems very reasonable and you feel like you've been understanding. Certainly, in a general sense, you know, in marriage we're supposed to compromise, right? So one compromise would be give him his own office, shut the door, and you have your own office, right? Where you each get to have your own environment. But you know, hoarding is illogical. You know, it's about fears, it's about loss, it's, you know, the inability to let go, being ambivalent. There's a whole, you know, host of things that go into that. And so I might ask him, you know, what feels scary when I ask you to move some of your stuff? What is it that you're afraid that will happen? Right? And then some of it, too, is kind of someone with maybe a more chaotic, disorganized mind that is like they need the stuff to remember. It's like aspects of their mind. And if they don't have that, then they won't, you know, be able to remember or to, you know, have what they need. So it's like if you could, instead of getting into the debate about cleaning the office or not cleaning the office, what is the meaning of all this for him?
He has an avoidant personality where that type of a question will not produce an answer. It will why am I starting trouble and creating a problem?
Well, sweetheart, it seems like right. So whenever you try to get close to this subject, I see your defenses go up and you want to run away. I'm really curious about that. You know, what is it that feels so frightening?
Okay.
Right? So instead of, yeah. you know, talking about the content, you talk about the process of what's happening when you guys try to lean into something.
And I would just say this. I think what both Jill and Mylon are thinking, and they can confirm that or not, this is different than a stubborn, resistant, or lazy spouse who doesn't want to clean up after himself.
Or even a controlling person who just wants everything his way.
Right. It's in a different realm mm-hmm. than that. And he really does.
Can I mention another thing? It's
sure.
not just the hoarding. I don't find a problem with drinking a glass of wine maybe two or three times out of the year, like let's uh-huh. go on a holiday, and it's never to get drunk. It's just I like it because he doesn't. He doesn't want me to do that. It's whatever he deems as unnecessary. We need to both follow it.
So Lisa, how long have you been married to your husband?
7 years.
Okay, so this is a second marriage for you?
Yes.
Okay, that's important. I want to come back to that in a few minutes, okay, after the break.
Okay. We'll take this break and come right back for more New Life.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the Transformation Welcome Gift, which includes a personal-sized Life Recovery Bible, a Life Recovery Journal, and 5 Life Recovery Workbooks. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life Video Library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops.
I did go to Take Your Life Back. That's been immensely helpful to me. That's why I continue to support the ministry with the hope that it, not only am I helping my own situation, that I'm helping others as well.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. So glad you're with us. And I think we had a final couple of things we wanted to say to Lisa, who's saying that, you know, he doesn't want her participating in anything that he's not participating in. And so I'm hearing a lot of fear on this guy's mm-hmm. part, and fear of losing control, fear of not being able to access things that are important to him. And he really, man, this has to be tough. Mm-hmm. Mylon, you brought up the fact that, you know, this was a second marriage here. And anything you want to talk about with her about that?
Well, Lisa, two things. One, it is not disrespectful to say no to someone. That's the essence of boundaries, is learning to separate from others. And it's important to realize that definition, learning to separate from others so they don't, that you have a sense of who you are apart from others. And so part of this is your journey of you learning to separate. In his book, Changes That Heal, the unit of the book devoted to what we commonly now call boundaries is entitled Learning to Separate from Others, which is what an infant does when they all of a sudden can toddle and walk. They learn to walk away from the caregiver. A lot of us don't separate well, and so we're then glued to others in a way that we don't know how to stand apart from. And we're not okay if the other person is not okay. So then we quickly conform to help them be okay, so we're okay. Now, I hope you understood all that. It is...
Well, and he was probably attracted to her compliance.
Probably.
Right.
But now we get into the whole issue of second marriages, or even first marriages for that fact. And a lot of times we don't thoroughly examine the person well or thoroughly vet this person, so that we find ourselves all of a sudden later, after all the excitement and dating and wedding and all that stuff happens, then we realize what we've said yes to. And perhaps you may want to say to him, you know what, I made a really big mistake 7 years ago. I really didn't look under the hood of this car that I bought. I didn't realize how controlling you were, and I can't make any suggestions, or if I want to drink wine whenever I want to and you don't want to, I have to do whatever it is you want me to do. This isn't healthy. And I would really come back to him, and really it's starting here at this point, and take responsibility for not asking the right questions at a time where you're very vulnerable and desirous of being with someone. We're also very vulnerable right then. And I would tell him something has to change.
I think a good way to have that conversation is to start with, you know, when we were dating, what I liked about you was this and this. What I missed, though, what I didn't fully understand, was the controlling part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you throw in a little of the plus there, he may be able to hear the negative a little more easily.
Yeah, he doesn't consider himself controlling. We've talked about this, and my consequence is that he ices me and will pretend I'm just lint that he can barely see in the home, and it's hard for me to live.
Yeah.
So in an environment where, because I then become ultra independent, like, okay, if this is how it is, and then maybe week two, he's like, good morning, and at that point, I'm like, look, pick which way you want to be.
Yeah.
You don't want to talk to me. I don't want to be on day 15, good morning, and then I have to fall back in line. I don't even want to do that anymore.
Right.
Good.
Well, Lisa,
good,
I want you to hold on, because what you really need is you going to see a therapist who can help you on a day-to-day basis, strategize, try this, that doesn't work, give you another approach, and deal with some of the stuff that you're having to deal. I'm going to send you Mylan's book, How We Love. I think that's going to help you see what the attraction is and how the dynamics are playing out here.
And this certainly begs the question, and we're not going to ask Lisa this, but we can imagine, I wonder how many marriages this has been for him. Because this isn't the first, this behavior isn't unique to Lisa.
Yeah,
I would assume not.
That's right.
So
I would assume not.
One thought about the word control.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not use that word. This guy has an inability to see things from another's perspective.
Correct.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well said. That was Lisa. I believe this is this Liza or Lisa that we're talking to now?
Well, we're on Max right now in
Just
Washington,
talk to Max,
D.C.
Then.
He listens
Max,
on
how are you?
WAVA. Max.
Let's talk to Max. Max, how are you today?
Hi, I'm fine, thanks. How you guys
what's
doing?
Going on? Good. What's going on in your life?
Well, I'm having some father-son issues. I think what it boils down is my son has been a little rebellious, and he thinks I'm a little controlling over him. And he said a couple of things. He did something wrong a couple of weeks ago, and I tried to correct him. And he thinks I was part of the problem because I don't let him make his choices. He's 15 years old, and I'm controlling. And so he feels like he needs to be defiant and, you know, rebel in some ways. And even as I try to, you know, talk to him and try to relate to him, I just see things from my viewpoint, and I don't see how I contribute to the issues of our relationship.
Okay.
And, you know,
can you give us a specific example of a problem that you guys have encountered?
Yeah, so one that happened recently is he's supposed to be his mother and I are divorced, and I get them part of the time and so on and so forth. So while he was here on his custody time, he decided he wants to go over to his mom's, and I said, well, you can't really do that because there's a schedule, and if that's going to happen, we're going to have to work out a new schedule or how that's going to work. But then he said, okay, fine. He went to a birthday party of his friends, and instead of coming home, he decided to go over to his mom. And he basically lied about it, saying he was going to be back home, and then calls me, you know, after he had gone to his mom's. He said, oh, I'm at my mom's house, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, why would you do that? And he said, you're supposed to come over here. You said you were coming over here. I said, well, you know, you didn't give me an option, and so on and so forth. And so I thought just some stuff like that, and try to understand how to relate with him.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, that's manipulative to get his own way. Does he get to do whatever he wants at his mom's house?
Yeah, their mom is pretty, you know, she'd be free, you know, let them do whatever they want kind of mom kind of. So we're different in that way. I'm more structured and, you know, you need to go by this and that.
Well, and Max, is he angry at you? Does he blame you for the divorce?
He doesn't blame me for the divorce. I mean, he hasn't said so or anything. I don't know. I can't say for sure, but there might be some resentment.
Okay.
I was listening to a caller called you guys earlier talking about how, you know, God talks to him or something like that. My wife said the same thing, that God told her to leave our marriage kind of thing. So, and I know she has issues around control and stuff like that, and I think everyone is trying to control her. So I don't know if that's feeding into, my son.
Well, it sounds like, at the very least, your relationship isn't where it needs to be with him. There's a disconnect there. You know, some of it is, okay, he's at that age, too, where he's pushing against the boundaries. And it's easier to kind of manipulate when you're between two households. But it sounds like instead of just trying to structure him, I think you need to find some creative ways to really connect with him, to do some things together that takes you guys out of the normal environment where you can connect and talk and talk about his resentments towards you and really, you know, be able to listen and hear his heart. And it will take some work, but usually, you know, doing some kind of activity side by side will lend itself eventually to talking.
Hey, Max, is he the firstborn?
Yeah, he is.
Okay, so this is the first time you've ever had a 15-year-old?
Yeah.
Well, that's important. That's an important little piece here. But you know, you describe him as rebellious and defiant. Part of that is the teenager tearing away and becoming an adult, but your son's also potentially very angry, not just at you, but at mom, at just having to grow up in a divorce home and go back and forth between two houses. And Jill's right. We need to connect. We need to listen and ask those questions. What do you feel around me?
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Final word here for Max, guys. What do you think here? I mean, his son is, I think, screaming at him, I'm not happy. I'm struggling here. Mm-hmm. And just outright defiance. And so, Max, my final word would be, I think you have to take son out to a nice dinner, and over a nice dinner say, hey, I I want to talk to you about some really important things that maybe I'm missing here, and give him a chance to really share his heart with you and where he is, or you might never be able to connect with him. Anything you guys have for him?
Well, sure. If it's very difficult, Max, for you to do that, although you sound very reasonable, okay, mm-hmm. just listening to you on the phone. Nonetheless, if we have no experience with feelings and emotions, and as I once was a long time ago, had a very low emotional IQ and a low relational IQ, you know, you may want to go to a therapist that can help the two of you have conversations and help to kind of put guardrails around the conversations to really help to make them productive. But anger is not a bad thing. It's an emotion we all have. And to be able to acknowledge it as opposed to saying you're angry and that's wrong, sometimes anger is very justified.
Right,
and
right.
to be able to say, tell me the things that do make you angry, and that would just be what I would say. What about you, Jill?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. Mm. And I think, you know, you can approach it of, I want to learn how to be a better dad. Mm-hmm. You know, you're growing up. I'm not in the home now. And I want to know how to relate to you. Mm-hmm. So that might be a way to approach therapy. Mm-hmm. This isn't because I'm wanting to fix you. This is because I want to learn how to better communicate with you so mm-hmm. that we can have a solid father-son relationship. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, Mylon, like, son, I'm missing something here. And so I want to do better.
I told one of my sons when he was about 28 years old, I said, look, when you were a teenager, I was a rookie parent. You know? I'd never had a teenager before. Yeah. All of a sudden, I had three at the same time.
Oh,
you
my
know?
Gosh.
And it was exciting and scary all at mm-hmm. the same time. And I told him, I made mistakes. And I said, what were the things that hurt you? And he rattled off a long list, and we spent yeah. hours talking about
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, if this is our first time through, this is new territory for us.
Yeah.
And to be able
sure.
to say to our kid, I've never done this before.
Yeah, my daughter reminds me that she was the guinea pig all the time, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Or as Mylon says, the test crash dummy.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to send you a copy of Forgiving Our Fathers and Mothers that you might want to pass on to him. It might be helpful there. And let's go to Lisa from Washington, D.C. Which one is it?
Hello.
Hi. How do you pronounce your name? Great. How can we help you today? Thanks for calling us.
Well, my friends encouraged me to give you a call. I've been suffering from depression and anxiety for years, and I keep on making really poor decisions, so currently I'm not working. I have a lot of anxiety, though, and I feel scared that I've lost my salvation.
Okay. You're thinking that you've done something so bad that God can't forgive it? Or what's that about, that loss of salvation thing?
Did you walk away from God?
I keep on doing things that I shouldn't do.
Well, can you give us one example of that?
Like instead of getting up and going to church, pulling the covers over my head and staying in bed all day long.
And you're thinking that God may reject you because you're doing that?
Yeah. I've made a mess with my life, and I'm not able to support myself, and I've let my family down.
Okay. All right. Well, we've just got a couple of minutes here, so I'm going to ask Mylon and Jill to give you the best they've got here. With that fear.
Okay, Liza, what you're describing, pulling the covers over your head, is exactly what you said. It's depression and anxiety, not mm-hmm. wanting to face the day. So right. this isn't, you know, God is not just a performance-based God, that if you don't perform well enough, if your life isn't successful enough, then he rejects you. You have the, uh-huh. you know, people lose, the only people who don't have salvation are the people that completely reject God. And you know what? They're not worried about losing their salvation.
That's right.
So you're just a person who's struggling. And yeah, you, like you said, you don't always make the best decisions. But when people are depressed and anxious, they don't see a full picture. It's like looking through a tunnel, and you see very few options. So therefore, you're not seeing all the options to make good decisions.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm really wanting you to get some help for your depression and anxiety. And have you done anything about that? Because staying in bed is not the help you need.
Right. I have a counselor.
Okay. So a counselor and possibly a psychiatrist. Because yeah. if you can't get out of bed, then that warrants medication. That, I mean, we're looking at clinical depression here.
Myla, anything you want to say in these final moments here with her? I'm so glad she called us to hear
yes.
what Jill just said.
You know, I'm glad her friend told you to call our mm-hmm. show. Liza, I'm going to guess you had a very difficult childhood.
Yes.
And that's important because, first of all, I'm so sorry that you did.
Yeah.
But when you take the personal responsibility of saying, God will not let me into heaven, or I am doing so poorly, really what we need to say is, my childhood started me off in the wrong directions.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to say to you, Liza, is it's not your fault that you're faltering. Mm-hmm. You didn't create this. You didn't write this formula for you. Now, mm-hmm. you're not. If you feel the tremendous guilt for your failures, that is something that is forgiven by a gracious, merciful God. But it is also the fault of other people, not you. Now, what we need to do is we need to take responsibility for it, but we're not responsible mm-hmm. that it happened. We need mm-hmm. to be responsible.
We didn't create it.
We didn't create it. We just need to be responsible to grow out of it. But I just want to give you empathy and say, this isn't just you. This is a reflection of the people who raised you, and you are, Kay and I say this all the time, Kay is my wife, we say it all the time, that the tougher your childhood, the tougher your adulthood. And so mm-hmm. it's important to keep that in mind and give yourself grace and not be so hard on yourself, but then get the right help, as Jill said.
Now, today right. we've had some people call us who other people were saying that they talked directly to God. Well, I don't think you've talked directly to God today, but I think the words that Mylan shed with you, very similar to what God would be saying. I'm so sorry that this happened to you. He understands. He's got a lot of grace. Hold on, I want to send you some really good stuff to encourage you. 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Anybody, if you need some help, you call them.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.